A salt marsh in winter is a soulful place. The muddy, wind-thrashed haunt of Brent goose, hen harrier and merlin, each bird a refugee from a still harsher Arctic or upland winter. The sound of a winter salt marsh, if you can hear it above the shrieking wind and the North Sea waves gnawing at the shore, is the haunted wail of the grey plover. In July, a salt marsh takes on another life. The mud is here still, of course. Wondrous, life-giving mud. And the tide still fills the channels twice daily in and twice daily out, bringing and dropping more mud, and more mud. It is not the mud which is different in July, but the plants which grow in it. For in July, a salt marsh is a haze of faded purple, splashed here and there with gold, crossed by snaking sinuous lines of silver grey. A July salt marsh is as heady and wonderful a wild sight as a bluebell would in May, and every bit as precious. The main wash of colour, the sine qua non of this impressionist palette, comes from the common sea lavender. This is the largest and fleshiest, and by far the commonest of Norfolk's four sea lavender species. Its papery flowers, numbering billions, turn mile upon mile of precious Norfolk salt marsh purple in July, in patches from the Wash coast to Breydon Water, but most particularly between Home and Kelling. Each salt marsh plant species requires minutely different conditions in which to thrive. A little longer inundation by the tide each day, a little less salt, a little more organic matter in the soil. So each is generally found at a specific elevation in the marsh or a specific distance from a creek. But as creeks twist, divide, s'enonce and die, so the marsh becomes fracturally complex, with each plant's ideal conditions scattered in many spots. Thus, although the background is the soft purple of common sea lavender, other colours occur throughout the marsh in July. The most consistent distribution is that of sea purslain, which lives by the sea. But, infuriatingly for the novice botanist, is not a purslain. It forms the silvery lines so characteristic of the marsh year-round. Look closely, and you will see that the lines follow the banks of creeks. As the tide flows into the marsh, it carries silt, which the sea has brought here from the mouth of the Humber. At the top of the high tide, when water breaks, the banks of the creek and flows out over the marsh, it loses energy. Less energy means less ability to carry particles, so even tiny particles of silt are dropped. Thus, levees form along the edges of creeks, where the silt deposited by the rising tides accumulates. Sea purslain, which likes a little less salt water exposure than common sea lavender, grows along them. From a high point over a salt marsh in July, such as the tower in the National Trust car park at Mawston, the lines of silver sea purslain clearly show the paths of creeks through the fabulous fog of purple sea lavender. Here and there will be splashes of gold too. These are the blooms of sea aster. Remarkably, this plant has two quite different flower forms. One looks much like a fleshy Michaelmas daisy, with a central pom-pom of golden disc florets surrounded by pale purple petal-like ray florets. The rayless form, unsurprisingly, lacks the purple rays, having only the gold pom-pom. Both are commonly seen in Norfolk. The boiled carrot legs of Redshank, the whirring oatmeal grey of the silver Wye, the leathery green of sea beet and the yolk-yellow stripes of a new queen buff-tailed bumblebee. There's far more colour to a Norfolk salt marsh in July than I can describe here. And there's sound and smell and sunshine. Nothing for it. You will have to don wellies or flip-flops and set off to explore one yourself. Happy squelching. NorfolkWildlifeTrust.org.uk.